Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal, Özil. Marca Mesut Özil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo, Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español, marca Nacho Monreal. Pim, pam, pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, I believe this is a goodly morning.
I believe it is a very goodly morning indeed. It's lovely, isn't it, to have a nice goodly morning on a Monday. It's not just about Arsenal. I think anyone who watched the Chelsea game, the goodliness of this morning would have been confirmed by that.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And also, I won an Oscar last night, so I'm very happy this morning.
Did it's you? Great. I hadn't
yeah.
checked.
Yeah,
I hadn't checked.
It was great.
What was it for?
Best supporting thing for a yoke, you know?
Oh, right.
It's a new category.
Yeah.
New category.
Okay.
Fine. So I'm the first winner.
Congratulations.
Thanks
Where
very
you
much.
Put it?
Just on the shelf, you know.
Few.
Paperweight okay. kind of thing.
Right.
Cool. They're heavier than you'd expect, these Oscars.
I really wouldn't know. I really wouldn't know.
One day, maybe you'll get there too. But let's talk about the Chelsea game just a little bit before we get on with the Arsenal stuff, because we were slightly inundated with tweets from people when all this was going down. I didn't see it live. I had to catch up on it later, and I was looking at Twitter and going, what the fuck is going on here? And then watching it back, it's absolutely extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah. I was watching live and I...
Were you laughing?
I was sort of in disbelief, really. I'd never seen anything like it. It's an amazing thing about football, isn't it? That you can be watching it for your whole life and still see something that you go, wow, I have never seen anything quite like that. My brother was there in the Chelsea end texting me saying, what's going on? Because imagine being in the crowd and like trying to decipher what's happening there. And of course, it was just... this ludicrous thing where he put himself in this position where, having done that, he had to produce an astonishing performance in the shootout. And although he did make one save, he also let one under his body.
The Aguero one, yeah.
Yeah, in quite sort of pathetic fashion. But it's created an interesting Twitter dynamic, because not only was hashtag Sarri out trending, we also had hashtag Kepa out. So
yes.
there's both sides of the argument now.
Absolutely. There was quite a few hashtag Sarri out and hashtag Kepa out at the same time. This one, for example, Sarri is not good for Chelsea. His style doesn't work. Hashtag Sarri out. Kepa, a waste of money. Worst keeper I've ever seen and disrespectful. Hashtag Kepa out. Breaks my heart to say, but something at Chelsea is broken. Hashtag fix Chelsea. And like this one as well. There's another one. Fuck hashtag Sarri out. Get this scrawny little rat Kepa out. Fuck off out of the club. It's a fucking disgrace. Wow, I haven't been this angry about football for so fucking long. Wow, 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 wow. Hashtag Kepa out. Get him out. Fucking awful.
Wow.
Some good ones.
This one's just come in. This is from Mr. Chelsea on Twitter. Sarri has lost all self-respect from his players. He and Kepa must go, including all the players that think they manage the team instead of the manager.
That's all of them.
Yeah. Get a broom through the club and sweep out the garbage. Hashtag Sarri out. Hashtag Kepa out. Hashtag Chelsea FC.
Hashtag Chelsea out. Chelsea need to get rid of Chelsea. That's what they need to get rid of. Oh, amazing. What larks. And good for us, you know, because let's face it, you know, they are a competitor for the top four. And if they are in some kind of disarray, any little thing that makes not our lives easier, but can perhaps nobble the opposition, then I'm absolutely all for it. So if the Chelsea dressing room is a shambles, then great. I'm absolutely delighted with that. Same with, you know, Manchester United. I'm not wishing injury on players, but the fact that they picked up three or four injuries in the game against Liverpool yesterday, okay, that's good for us. we still have to do what we have to do. But if it creates maybe a bit of wiggle room, because it might affect the form of the other teams, then I'm all on board for that.
Yeah, I wasn't watching the United game, obviously, because I was at the Arsenal match. But intermittently, I've just sort of, you know, checked what was going on there. And it was kind of incredible. Players were just sort of going down every 5 minutes, it seemed.
It was like that game. Do you remember we played an FA Cup game a couple of seasons ago? I think we lost to someone like, fuck, I can't remember who it was, but I think it was a League One team or maybe a Championship team. And within the first 15 minutes, we lost two players. Walcott and Oxlade-Chamberlain, I think, got injured.
That sounds about right.
I can't remember who it was, but it was one of those where players were just
was
going
down. Blackburn or something like that?
Perhaps. I can't remember. I've sort of tried to blank games like that out of my memory as much as possible. Was it League Cup or FA Cup? I can't remember. But it was that kind of a thing with the frequency of the injuries. But anyway.
And yeah, go that on. Would be good for us.
It would be.
You know, we've got United around the corner. They've got a really tough fixture list at the moment as well, especially factoring in that Champions League tie against PSG. And if Chelsea have to play Willy Caballero, I'm going to say that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look, I thought it was a good day on all counts. And of course, the United result kind of bumped Arsenal up into the top four as well, which is no bad thing.
Absolutely. Final one on this. I've never been so sad to be a Chelsea fan in my life. Willy would have saved all five. Mark my words. Hashtag Kepa out. Hashtag pray for Kepa. Hashtag Sarri out.
Hashtag Willy in, it sounds like.
Chelsea need to get their Willy in, that's for sure.
Wow. Oh, that's so great. I mean, if he's never been so sad as a Chelsea fan in his life, he probably doesn't remember the 90s. He's probably quite a recent Chelsea fan, I suspect, but then aren't they all?
Yeah, well, there you go. There's your brother. He's going to have a go at you for that. But there.
In fairness to him, he remembers the days of Gavin Peacock and John Spencer.
Dave Besant.
He suffered, yes, exactly.
Who was the Russian guy who used to wear the fucking tracksuit pants in goal the whole time?
Dmitry Kharin.
Yes. They've come a long way.
They've come a long way.
All right. Well, look, we are into the top four after a 2-0 win over Southampton. And in typical Arsenal style, there was bad and there was good. But I think there was a lot more good than bad. The bad came quite early in the game. And that was Nathan Redmond going clean through on goal in the 6th minute. And I was like, how the fuck did that happen? And then I noticed the defending or not defending. It was Mustafi stepped up, you know, on the halfway line to try and play an offside. I really don't know what the fuck he was thinking. He got turned. He got back, got turned in the box. Bernd Leno made what is, I suppose, an absolutely crucial save, not least because it stopped us going 1-0 down, but within 60 seconds or less than that, we were ahead. An amazing 60 seconds of football, not good for Southampton, but very good for us.
Yeah, and I think Leno deserves a lot of credit, not just for that save, but for a few he made yesterday. I thought he was pretty important. And Southampton, despite being sort of largely inferior, I mean, I feel like we say this every game, but despite being an inferior team, created a number of quite good chances, or at least we granted them a number of good chances. But he was up to everything yesterday, so I thought he had a really good day. And fortunately, yeah, I mean, it was just a crazy 60 seconds where we might have been behind and then we were in front. And what can you say? I mean, it's sort of the first goal in Premier League games is always so crucial. Yeah. And the fact that we got it, I think, made the whole 90 minutes significantly more comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, we did take off after we scored that goal. I think we really played very well, to be honest. And it wasn't a case, I think, you're right, I think Leno was probably our standout player on the day. But, you know, everybody else stuck in a good 7.5, 8 out of 10 performance as well. So it wasn't a case that we were carrying anyone or this guy was miles ahead of the rest. I think it was a really good team performance, overall team performance. And once we got that goal, smart finish by Lacazette, actually. Mkhitaryan, I'm not sure it was necessarily a cross, but he reacted very quickly to put that away. After that, I know Leno had to make a save. It was a good save, and we got the ball away. But in general, I thought the way we played was really encouraging, because we've ground out wins a lot this season, and we've gone, okay, that's fine. We haven't played particularly well, but we've won, and that's the main thing. But there comes a point where you like to see a bit of performance that goes along with the result. And I thought some of the combination play yesterday was fantastic. You know, Ramsey able to combine with Iwobi, Mkhitaryan, Lacazette, I thought, held it up very well. Lichtsteiner was great down the right. How often have we said that? Probably never. Kolasinac, absolutely brilliant down the left in the final third, but also in the defensive third. I thought he had one of his strongest games for us. Xhaka pulling the strings from midfield, you know, Torreira snapping around, doing everything. Xhaka, you know, I know he had that moment, but in general was really, really good. And I think it was, I'm not going to say it's a confirmation bias or anything like that, but when you play a team like that and you play with a back four and you have that extra man further forward up the pitch, it helps you control football matches much better than if you're playing with a back three, in my opinion. I know there are going to be times when we use a back three, and that could very well be the case this weekend when we go to Tottenham for the North London Derby. But at home against a team like Southampton, you take the game to them, and I think it paid off.
Yeah, and I do think the system was part of that on the day. And I also think the personnel combinations that we used were quite important. You know, we changed the team up from the Barthez game. We had Xhaka and Torreira back alongside each other, which I think on its day has been our best central midfield partnership. You had Kolasinac kind of reunited with Iwobi on the left, and I think Kolasinac to Iwobi was the most frequent pass combination on the day. A lot came down that side. And I also think there's a kind of natural balance to Lacazette and Ramsey, because you've got a guy who's going to sort of take the ball with his back to goal, who can bring others into play, and someone who is really about movement and running onto it. It strikes me that, you know, Lacazette and Ramsey feels a bit like a partnership, and Ozil and Aubameyang feels a bit like a partnership. And I think being able to rotate with players of that quality between now and the end of the season, particularly when the fixtures come thick and fast like they do at the moment, it's going to be really important.
Yeah, I noticed you tweeting about the team when it came out and maybe wondering if the Ozil on the bench thing was going to become an issue or something that people were going to get stressed out about. But, you know, I think we spoke about it on Friday, didn't we? Or Thursday night, whenever we did the last one. Didn't necessarily expect Ozil to start this one, because when you haven't played for, whatever, 3 weeks and you come back and you do 90 minutes, I know it was just against Bate, but it always felt to me like this was the kind of game he was going to rotate him for. And when you think about this week and what we're going to do, you know, I don't think it was anything. I think it was more physical than tactical in terms of yesterday, but also we've got a game on Wednesday where you would see Ozil as a potential starter, whereas Tottenham away, I don't necessarily see him as an automatic starter for that game. So to balance his team and to keep players fresh, you know, Ramsey started yesterday. I think Ozil will start on Wednesday. I think Ramsey will probably get a start, or should get a start, in the North London Derby on Saturday, because he's the kind of player who can counteract the physical and the what's the word I'm looking for? The energy that Tottenham have when they play. I think Ramsey's a good counterbalance to that, you know, in the team. So, you know, for me, no issue. And it turned out well. And when he came on, I thought he got into the game quite well, Ozil. He doesn't always do that as a substitute. But it was nice that a decision didn't become a big thing, or there was a lot of fuss about it. It was just, okay, we do it. And the result, of course, is a big part of that.
Yeah, and I also thought that when you looked at our bench for this game, it gave you quite a lot of comfort, and that hasn't always been the case this season. But, you know, I'm just trying to think now, what was our substitutes bench? It was
Koscielny, Monreal, Ozil, Aubameyang, Suarez, who else?
Guendouzi. And Cech. Mean, that is a really strong subs bench. You know, none of those players really would look particularly out of place in a starting 11. So I think that obviously speaks to the fact that we're kind of over the worst of our injury problems, with only the long-term absentees. Touch wood, yeah, absolutely. Only the long-term absentees still missing. But I think that, you know, that does give you a position of strength. And, you know, looking forward to Bournemouth on Wednesday, I'm sure, and we've got a question coming up about this later, but I'm sure there'll be more changes. But I don't think we're necessarily weakening the team at, you know, by shifting a couple of players in and out. We're just sort of shifting the dynamic slightly.
Yeah.
But the chemistry was good yesterday. And when you do rotate, you know, I think you always take a slight risk with affecting the balance, or you never quite know if the shape of the team's going to be right. But it really looked good. And I think against Barthez, you know, we put goals past them, but at times it was a bit workman-like. And the goals came from set pieces and things like that. But this this was a really, I thought, good attacking display, particularly in the first half. I think it was the best we've looked going forward for quite some time, certainly since that the first half of that Chelsea game.
Yeah, completely agree. And I think your point about the rotation goes some way to explain that. There's a certain amount of freshness to the team. You know, there were six changes from the team that beat Bate. You know, Kolasinac in, Torreira in, Ramsey in, Lacazette in,
Socrates,
and Leno obviously in goal. But you know, when you look at the second goal and the fact that Lacazette is harrying and chasing and pressing and, you know, forcing a mistake from the goalkeeper, really. I mean, I know the defender almost got caught in the ball. Keeper should make a better clearance than that. But, you know, it came from that kind of high pressing that we haven't seen an awful lot of at times this season. Something we've been told this is what we're about, but we don't see it that often. And the evidence of how it works was there with that second goal. The clearance came to Iwobi. Iwobi across to Mkhitaryan. I thought the finish from Mkhitaryan was absolutely excellent. Controlled first time into the bottom corner, just use the pace of the ball rather than trying to blast it himself. So a good goal and nice to see the two wide men combine. You know, Iwobi has had his ups and downs this season, but he looked yesterday and has looked to me over the last couple of weeks like a player who is beginning to feel a bit more confident. And I see elements of Oxlade-Chamberlain in him in a way, in that he feels like a confidence player and needs to be feeling confident in order to produce. So if he is, you know, on that kind of upward trajectory, then that's a good thing for us because, you know, end product is the thing that people will talk about when it comes to Alex Iwobi. And, you know, I think he gets a bit too much of a hard time, but I can understand some of the frustration at times. So when he has come out of a game and got himself an assist, you know, I think it's good for him, obviously. And good, I hope, for fans who can see that he is a guy who can produce, even if he does need to be a little bit more consistent at times.
Yeah, he does. And I feel like the end product side of his game, I think that may come, but it also may just be kind of who he is, that he's more of a connector type than someone who's sort of involved in the sort of last movement, the assist or the goal.
Yeah.
But I still think for a 22-year-old player, he's doing very well. I thought he was excellent in the first half yesterday, maybe faded slightly in the second, but I think Arsenal collectively, you know, we're sure we'll get onto that, sort of took the foot off the gas a bit. But he's also 22 years old, and I was looking at the Manchester United squad last week and thinking about someone like Jesse Lingard, who, you know, has developed into a very useful player for them, not starting every game but starting some and deployed tactically here and there. And he's an academy product of theirs, but Jesse Lingard's 26. You know, he's 4 years older than Alex Iwobi.
Yeah.
When he was 22, he was on loan at Derby County in the Championship. So I do think there is still potentially quite a way to go in his development, and the fact that he's been playing in our first team for quite some time, I think, causes us to overlook that he's relatively early on still and could have a whole kind of second phase of his development, you know, like Lingard has. So. Yeah. We'll see. Different players, of course, but I think it's interesting.
Yeah, true. And also, you know, we don't need any reminding about what a pain in the neck Lingard is. So, yeah, no, I mean, that was good. I mean, do you have any regrets about the first half in terms of the amount of goals that we probably should have scored as opposed to the amount of goals that we did? I know goal difference could be a factor. Lacazette, there's a brilliant picture, isn't there? Have you seen the picture of Ramsey and Lacazette? Ramsey's sort of picking Lacazette up and he's got his, like, he's like, no, I can't believe I missed that. And Ramsey's like, oh, I can't believe you missed that either. Like, they both had really terrible news. But, you know, we should have scored more goals in that half. Are we nitpicking to be critical of that based on how we played in that first half? Or is it something that we should focus on a little bit? I mean, it feels to me a little bit light nitpicking because we did play very well. We kept a clean sheet. We won. We got 3 points. There were encouraging signs from the performance. But, you know, based on the amount of chances we created and the quality of some of those chances, you know, we probably should have made Southampton pay.
I think we probably should have done. I'm just looking at the goal difference now. It's very tight, but we are actually ahead of both United and Chelsea on goal difference by 1 and 2 goals, respectively. I think it could be a factor. So I guess there's a little bit of regret there, especially when you think about that Lacazette chance. I mean, how that managed to go over the bar, I don't quite know.
Amazing.
It's one of those where,
yeah, go on.
Well, it's one of those where actually at the point it goes over the bar, it's only fractionally over, but because it's still rising, it kind of looks much worse than it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, look, he should still score. There's no debate about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely, he should score that. Great work from Kolasinac to set him up as well, though. I think it's worth pointing that out. And that
I thought Kolasinac was really good yesterday. I mean, I was looking at his passing stats, which is sort of, he's infamous for delivering really poor passing numbers, but he completed 63 of 73 passes yesterday, which is unusually high from him, and 19 of 22 in the attacking third.
Right, which is
the most of any player on the pitch.
Well, it just shows you, doesn't it, that like if he can improve that part of his game, then his overall game, his overall performance is going to be significantly better.
Yeah, I mean, 10 ball recoveries as well, 2 blocks. I mean, he has an outstanding match.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I wrestle with is, you know, I think as an Arsenal fan, sometimes you see a player perform at that level and you think, well, they can do that, so presumably they'll just do that every week now. And it doesn't always happen like that. Like, even if you take Granit Xhaka, I thought in this game, Xhaka was really good. His distribution was excellent. I thought he controlled the midfield. I thought Southampton, you know, they tried to press him, but, you know, he escaped that press. He was more mobile than we're used to seeing him. I thought he was really smart in how he turned and used the ball. But he also managed to just give one away. Do you know what I mean? Like on the edge of his own box. And I kind of feel like that is just who he is. I think this game is the perfect illustration that Xhaka is always going to have that on his locker. And we can always kind of hope it'll be ironed out. But I think that's probably unlikely. And the same with Kolasinac. Like, he was great. And I'd love to say, and that's what he'll be like going forward. But I think I need to see it more consistently before I can really get on board that track.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So what did you make of the second half? Because Southampton made a double change. They changed their system. I think there's a natural inclination when you're 2-0 up, you know, you're going to get pressured a little bit by the opposition who are trying to find a way back into the game. Whatever change he made, Hasenhüttl, it worked because we found it much more difficult to control the game. I don't think we were really under any pressure, though. That's the thing. Even when they brought on Charlie Austin, who always scores against Arsenal, you know, it didn't really make any difference to them from an attacking point of view. So while we didn't pose as much of an attacking threat, I think there was something relatively pleasing about the way we were able to control and maintain the lead, albeit Xhaka did his best to make it a little bit nervy with that terrible pass. You know, I think there's something to be said for that. And we're not a team that keeps a lot of clean sheets. We know that. So the confidence we can derive from that, Leno played his part with a really good save late on. But beyond that, we weren't really threatened. And I think towards the end of the game as well, when Aubameyang came on, some better decision making, and we would have extended that lead even further.
I was really happy when Leno made that late save. That was a sort of real fist pump moment for me, because I was reminded a little bit of the Huddersfield match, where we had looked kind of comfortable-ish and then not kept the clean sheet right at the end. And I think it was important that we did, and I think it was good that we did. I thought, by the way, a player we haven't mentioned is Sokratis. I thought he was really good on the day.
I enjoyed that bit where he gave out to, I think it was Aubameyang, because they had a bit of space down their right-hand side to get a cross in. And we got it clear, and, you know, you could just see TV cameras just turned to him, and he's like, you know, giving us some real socks to Aubameyang.
But, you know, I think I look at him and he's just, I mean, we've said it before, but he is just a centre-half through and through, isn't he? He's someone, you know, you'd never ask him to fill in another position, because he is a pure central defender and he really loves his trade. And I think, you know, I'm quite glad of his presence there. And any of our best defensive performances, I think, have tended to have him involved. So it's good to see him back in the starting 11. But yes, I was really happy to keep the clean sheet. I thought, to be honest, even though we took the foot off the gas in the second half, and I think part of that is down to Southampton. I think inevitably we look at Arsenal and say, oh, well, they didn't play as well. But I think you have to also look at the opposition, and I think they adapted a little bit to what we were doing. I think they changed their system, their shape. They got a centre forward on. And I think, you know, that was a big influence on the game. But I was never worried. I was never concerned. And I actually thought we could have added a couple more.
Sure.
There's that one where Aubameyang goes through and has a shot blocked. He might have laid it on for Torreira, potentially. I mean, I don't blame him taking the shot on. But I think there was another one where Kolasinac got in and just missed the pullback. It sort of screwed across goal. So there were a few chances to extend that lead. But all in all, I thought it was a really good performance. And to be honest, we haven't been able to say that much recently. So it was a lovely day in that respect.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, we were looking for some green shoots. I think we got them with that first half in particular. And I think there were things about the second half that were encouraging as well. And also, I suppose, when you're 2-0 up and you're at home, and you know you've got another game on Wednesday, and you know as well you've got a North London derby on Saturday, I suppose, subconsciously at least, you're not going to spend the second half chasing around like a madman, expending all that energy, because you don't necessarily have to. You know, I know it would be nice to score more goals and everything else, but I suppose a bit of common sense or game management, however you want to call it, in that regard, might have played a part in the second half performance too. You know, we were 2-0 up. We didn't have to go running and chasing and trying to hunt down the opposition. We could, as much as possible, soak up the pressure, control the game, control possession when we had it, which I think we did quite well at times. So I thought there was a lot to like about yesterday. I know it was just Southampton, but also it was just Bate on Thursday night, and I think there was a big difference between the two performances there. Whether that speaks to more focus on the Premier League, maybe. Do you think that could be a factor? You know, when they look at a team, when they look at a game against Southampton, and they go, okay, well, yeah, this is going to be tough because they're scrapping for points to avoid relegation. They've beaten us already this season. You know, we know the top four is the first target for this season. Against a game against Bate, you go, yeah, we'll beat
Maybe.
Bate.
I do think the Premier League is a really tough competition, and I think that the gap, the financial gap that exists between the top six sides and the rest, I think has, in some people's minds, exaggerated the idea of how easy these kind of fixtures are.
Yeah.
You know, like, even a team like Southampton, they've got a top coach, a really well-regarded coach, who's got that team playing well. And I think the fact that, you know, I feel like I'm almost talking in clichés now, because, you know, the fact that you can see Crystal Palace go to Man City and win and things like that, I think does speak volumes. And I'm not I'm not saying this from a perspective of, like, the Premier League, the greatest brand in the world, anyone can beat anyone. But I do think sometimes I kind of see us expected to just turn up and roll over anyone who's not in the top six. And I think that is a little bit... I think that underestimates some of the quality that these teams have. I don't know, maybe I'm alone in this, but I kind of feel like if you look at the Premier League now, as compared to when, like, the Invincibles, you know, went unbeaten, however many years ago that was ago, 10 or 15 years ago, I think that the smaller teams actually pose a greater threat at this stage than they did back then.
Maybe, but I also think that in some ways what we did that season with the Invincibles and how good we were back then, we forget that a lot of the games were a real scrap in that season.
And we drew a hell of a lot of games.
We drew 12 games, you know? And when you look at some of the draws, okay, let me just go through them here. Just going through. You know, we drew against Portsmouth, 1-1. We drew with Charlton, 1-1. We drew 0-0 with Fulham. We drew 1-1 with Leicester. We drew 1-1 with Bolton. You know, 1-1 with Everton, and even some of the wins, 1-0 against Southampton. Let me have another look here. 2-1 against Charlton. You know, when you say it out loud, Arsenal, the Invincibles versus Charlton, you're thinking, okay, well, that'd be nice and easy. And we scored in that game, if I'm right, we scored, here it is, 2 goals in the opening 4 minutes. And then Charlton got one back with half an hour to go. And it wasn't as comfortable as people like to remember. You know, so that's always been an element of the Premier League, I think.
I think maybe it's exaggerated now by the fact that our record against the top six is so poor that we almost feel obliged to beat everybody else. So it creates a kind of inherent pressure and expectation. But, yeah, I don't think too many games this season really have felt like gimmies, you know, that we've just had to turn up and roll them over. And I think Southampton, to be honest, did feel like that for a good portion of the game, probably about an hour of the game. And I think that's credit to us, really, because I thought in the first 10 minutes, I was a bit like, oh, these guys might give us a problem. They were pressing really high. They had that chance that Leno saved.
Yeah.
But I think we made our quality tell, and that was encouraging. You know, we've been looking for, as you say, green shoots, performances as well as results, and yesterday was a day when we delivered that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, I mean, we do have a game on Wednesday. Do you want to chat about that a bit now, or do you have a question about it? We could do it in part two. Or
we had a couple of people asking about questions about how we'd rotate and things like that, so maybe we'll save that for then, shall we?
Okay, let's do that. We'll take a break here. Come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog and at Arseblog, and also on the Arseblog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArseblog. James, I will let you go first because you said you got questions about the game on Wednesday. So fire ahead.
Okay. This question comes from Ashish Srivastava. And Ashish says, who would you rest for the Bournemouth game, keeping an eye on the derby at the weekend?
Who would I rest? Well, I think we're going to play a different formation in the derby than we will against Bournemouth. I think we're probably going to play three centre-halves on Saturday.
I think that's probably likely too. Oh,
yeah, away from home. I think we will. So what would I do differently from the team that played yesterday? Lichtsteiner might be out because he is a back problem, so we'll have to wait and see what happens with him.
Another. He didn't go down the tunnel yesterday. He just went and sat on the bench, so it can't have been too serious.
Okay.
But yes, he did have some sort of issue, didn't he? And Iwobi was also substituted with what looked like a calf problem.
Yes. It looked like cramp at first, and then he tried to run it off but couldn't. So hopefully it is just cramp and nothing more serious than that, because he is an important cog in the machine at this moment in time. But in terms of risking him Wednesday night, it might be sensible to just give him a week off because he's played a lot recently. I saw a tweet directed at me yesterday, and it's like, why does Ozil or Iwobi never get rested? Well, you know, and it's a fair point. He's played a lot. It will be so, particularly in the last little while. So maybe he is a player who could do with a bit of a rest. I think we'll see Guendouzi come back into the team. I think we'll see, potentially, if Iwobi is out, we might well see Denis Suarez.
Unleash Suarez.
Unleash the Suarez.
Wow.
Because I'm not sure who else we could play out there, really. You know, I think it's going to be Ozil in for Ramsey. I don't know what he's going to do in terms of his striker, Lacazette or Aubameyang. I think it'll be just one, maybe Aubameyang, because it feels like he could do with a goal. He's four games without a goal now, and he's trying very hard, and not much is working, so we might see that. Will he rest Koscielny, stick with Mustafi and Sokratis against a team like Bournemouth? I think he probably will. Maybe Monreal in. you know, add some freshness on the left-hand side. But it's nice, actually, isn't it, that he does have options. He has actual genuine options, particularly as we look at the top end of the pitch when you've got Lacazette, Aubameyang, Ozil, Ramsey, Mkhitaryan, Iwobi, all to choose from. Suarez also in the squad. You know, I think Suarez, why not? Give him a go, see what he's like. If it works, great. If it doesn't,
hopefully you've got someone on the bench, you know, who can come on and change it if required. I think Guendouzi probably will come in on Wednesday, but I have this hunch that he might have a decent chance of starting Saturday as well, just for his legs and his energy, and we know how much Emery likes to use him. But having had a rest of the weekend, yeah, I think he probably will come in. I would like you rest Kolasinac. I don't know what I'd do at right back. It really depends, doesn't it, on who's available in terms of Maitland-Niles and Lichtsteiner. If Maitland-Niles is on the way towards fitness, you'd think they would have Saturday as potentially a target for him, because if we play three at the back, we're going to need wing-backs, and he's probably the guy best suited.
But I think he was sick, not injured.
Right,
so that was the story from the weekend, that he was ill. So, you know, unless he's got scurvy.
Sure.
He should
be okay.
They might
keep him in cotton wool then, I don't know, until Saturday. I'm not sure. But yeah, I think it'll be four at the back on Wednesday and three or five on Saturday.
Yeah. Here's a question from Joe. At Joe Arsenal _. Six changes from Thursday, and yet it felt rather seamless. Fielded strong teams in both matches. If we remain able to rotate in this way, how realistic is it that we could finish in the top four and win the Europa League?
Wow. the mood changes quick.
It does.
I think it is relatively realistic. I saw, you know, that people do those things where they kind of put up like percentage chances of teams finishing in certain positions. And I believe, probably partly because we're the incumbent at the moment, we're currently the favourite to make fourth, which feels surprising to me. It feels like a couple of weeks ago that did not feel the way things stood, but that things have moved. And I guess the fixture list coming up will play its part in that. I think it's probably quite unlikely that we do both, simply because I kind of have always imagined that at one point or other, we're going to have to focus, that we're going to have to pick a path. Either it'll be picked for us because we'll go out of Europe, or the league will feel beyond us and we'll accommodate. What would happen if we get both? Nothing, I suppose. We just get more prize money.
Yeah, but it would be a really feel-good end to the season, wouldn't it? You know, there's a lot to be said about, you know, okay, you get the tangible trophy and you get the entry into the Champions League and the financial benefit of that. But what I think it would do as well is reinvigorate a fan base, which is feeling still a little bit flat. You know, I saw a number of questions today about the atmosphere in the stadium and everything else, which I can't speak to. I wasn't there. You were there. If you want to pass comment on it, you know, feel free. But, you know, I'm not sure how easy it is to answer questions about the dynamic of 60,000 people inside a stadium, because there are so many disparate opinions and people behave differently in stadiums. There is no one way that people behave. But I do think that if something like that happened, if we were to win a European trophy and finish in the top four, it would generate a kind of excitement and belief in the squad, and maybe a little bit of a connection between this squad and the manager and the fans, which isn't always as strong as it might be, you know? So I think there'll be a real benefit from it from that point of view. I think it's probably not realistic to do both, but if I had to put money on one, I think I probably fancy our chances of finishing in the top four more than winning the Europa League.
Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I'm not sure. I find it hard to call. Do you have a preference? If I said to you, which would you prefer if it was just for one?
Oh, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because I'd love to win a European trophy. I'd love for us to win a European trophy, because we haven't won one in so long. And, you know, everyone loves a final and everyone loves a trophy. So I'd be sort of inclined to go along with that simply for that reason. But if you were to ask me what I think might be better in terms of how the perception of the team is and what it might mean over 38 games to finish, you know, higher up the table than Manchester United or Chelsea, maybe even Tottenham, you know, if things start going sideways for them, then you could see big benefits to that as well. It's difficult to choose.
Apparently, there's more prize money at stake for top four. You know, you get more of the Champions League pot.
Yeah.
If you finish in the top four than if you win the Europa League, significantly more. So it's really hard, actually, because, you know, on that side of things, you're like, well, that would give us more to invest in the squad. It might do more for our kind of credibility. But as a fan, you know, you don't want to turn down trophies.
Yeah.
Even if it is the Europa League.
Hmm.
Speaking of Tottenham, who you mentioned just then, Jason Williams, who's at Williams Writes on Twitter, says, who should we root for on Wednesday? Because, of course, Tottenham play Chelsea on Wednesday. And he lays out the options as A, Chelsea shudder to give us a better shot at overcoming Tottenham. B, Spurs vomits in mouth to hurt Chelsea's top four chances. C, a draw so they both drop points. Or D, a massive sinkhole to swallow Stamford Bridge.
I have a similar one here from Harry S, who's at Harry Hairbear. Help me understand how to watch Chelsea and Tottenham this week. Who am I cheering for? A meteor strike or sudden onset incontinence among both starting 11s? I think a draw probably is the one we want, isn't it? Because I can't... I know Chelsea are a closer competitor for the top four, but I cannot possibly sit here and say, I want Tottenham to win a game and to beat Chelsea. I just can't. I can't do it. Nor can I say, I want Chelsea to beat Tottenham because, you know, that would give them more points. So both teams dropping 2 points and perhaps reenacting one of the famous battles of World War One with bayonets and mustard gas on the pitch would be, you know, the icing on that particular cake. Remember a couple of seasons ago when Tottenham were still more or less, they were still thereabouts in terms of the title and they were chasing Leicester, and then they imploded in that game where they just lost their minds and lost their discipline. So I'd like to see that, some on-pitch violence and perhaps some red cards, few injuries.
Another Man U Liverpool wouldn't go amiss, would it? A 0-0 draw and a few injuries.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I think that's what we can that's the best we can hope for, realistically. So
I mean, of course, if Spurs were to lose and we were to beat Bournemouth, we would be 4 points off, and if we somehow won the North London Derby, we'd be just 1 point off Spurs. So,
yeah.
A tantalising prospect.
Yes, it is.
I'm not particularly realistic about it. If I'm, you know, I don't think it's that likely.
Yeah.
That we could overhaul Spurs, but you know.
Well, you know, again, I think we saw some evidence of their. You know, their Spursiness, didn't we, in the weekend? And Pochettino's behaviour towards the referee was really, really poor, I thought. And if they're beginning to feel the pressure, as they normally do at some point in a season, you know, maybe we can turn the screw a little bit on them. You know, a few weeks ago, if you'd said going into a North London derby, how are you feeling about this one? I'd have been like, not that confident. And I'm feeling a bit more confident now because of the way we played yesterday. I know it was only Southampton, etc., etc., but, you know, follow it up with a good result against Bournemouth, and we go into that game with a little bit of momentum behind us. And, you know, the old form going out the window in a derby is a cliche, but it's also true. So, who knows? Who knows? It would be good if they really did have a massive collapse, though, wouldn't it? It'd be massive.
It would be great. It would be great.
We could go through the Pochettino out hashtag.
Yes. I mean, Look, if you said to me now, if you added a third element to that choice, you know, finish, or if you made it a binary choice between, you know, win the Europa League or finish above Spurs and qualify for the Champions League that way, that, you know, I think I'm swinging towards the league then, just for the joy of that.
Yeah.
But we shall see. We shall see.
Okay, here is a question from Ade Damola Akintola, who's Ade Demolisher, and he's just a weightlifter. Oh my God, he is. Wow, the man has got some arms. he says, what to make of the Munchie rumours? Does he seem like a low-grade Sven when comparing the transfers made? And this, of course, is the story during the rounds that Munchie is going to leave Roma and become our technical director or whatever he might become, reunite with Unai Emery, with whom he worked at Sevilla for a number of seasons, and add to the Spanishification, I don't know how you do it, of the Arsenal footballing, well, I was going to say ruling class, but the executives, you know, manager, technical director, head of football, would all be Spanish. So what do you make of the idea of Munchie coming in? And I have to say, I've been told that this is probably happening. People within the club have been told that this could well be the case. So, you know, it's not just rumours from Marca, who everybody seemed a bit dismissive of. I believe that there really is something to this story. So what do you make of it?
Well, I think it's positive. I think it's really positive. I think, you know, having lost Sven, I think that Munchie is someone who holds a comparable reputation and who works in a similar fashion and who crucially has an excellent relationship with the head coach. You know, everyone harks back to the years of Dean and Wenger working in tandem, and so much of that was based on the understanding and the relationship those two guys had. And if Emery and Munchie can, you know, kind of reprise what they had at Sevilla, I think that will be a good thing. In terms of the talent he's identified, I mean, there are plenty of good players in there. You know, Dani Alves, Rakitic, Banega, Luis Fabiano, people who he plucked
from. Julio Baptista.
Of course, you know, people who he plucked from relative obscurity and made kind of stars of. I suppose what might concern people is he was doing that at Sevilla, you know, and those stars were then sold on to Barcelona. But I think that's realistically kind of where we are in the food chain at the moment. I think we need someone with that skill set. I don't know, to be honest, I can't really speak to the quality of his work at Roma. I don't really know how he's been getting on there.
If only we had a handy tool at our disposal with which we could find out. So let me see.
They're currently fifth in Serie A, I know that much.
Okay, let's see. How is Munchie doing at Roma?
I feel like you're just going to get a load of results about people.
Remember Munchie? I mean, they sold Salah, didn't they, to Liverpool?
That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little bit hit and miss in terms of what he's done at Roma, but he's clearly a very well-respected guy. Lots of contacts. I suspect it will see us add to the Spanish, what's the word?
Contingent.
Contingent. Thank you. I think, you know, going back to his home country and looking for young Spanish players, I think we could well see an increase in the number of Spanish players at the club. But it's one of those where if you're looking at the candidates, potential candidates mentioned for the role of technical director or the replacement for Sven, he feels like the standout one to me who is available anyway. I'm not sure about Overmars. And I think if we are committed to Unai Emery, which we seem to be, then having somebody who has a good relationship with him and knows what kind of players he likes to work with is probably a good thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he's got a great track record of bringing South American players to Europe, and I think Raul Sagnier's done a bit of that in his time at Barcelona too.
Can't do that, though. Not really going to be able to do that because of the work permit differences. You know, you don't have to have the international caps to get a work permit in Spain if you come from South America in the same way that you do if you come to the UK. So,
true. But if we could get Wellington an exceptional talent visa, you know, I'm sure we could get a few others. it seems to be quite a sort of random process, doesn't it? Because, like, sometimes a player will, sometimes a player won't get one. You know, Joel Campbell didn't get one, I think, famously, and that hence had to go on loan many, many times. Wellington Silva did, and then never really amounted to anything.
What's he doing now? What's Wellington Silva doing now?
He plays for Barcelona. He's a new striker.
He's disguised as Lionel Messi. He's playing for...
What about the timing of the Monchi move? Do you worry... I had a couple of questions I saw about this. Sorry, forgive me for not knowing who asked them. But about, you know, there's talk that he might not be available until the summer, until kind of June.
Yeah.
Does that concern you?
It's a little bit weird, isn't it? Because if it's a case that he's coming in and we want him to have an input into our transfer business, I mean, he can't just come at the end of June or whenever his contract expires with Rome and just rock up and go, okay, what's the story here? What do we need? Oh, centre half, maybe two, and right back, is it? Oh, and a left back, and, you know, a winger, okay. Hang on a sec, I'll just, you know, nip out to the shops and get them. You know, there's got to be something a bit more strategic than that. I do wonder if it creates maybe a conflict of interest.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
For him at Roma, that if he is contracted or if he's going to stay with Roma until the summer, how much planning are they going to put? You know, a similar situation maybe with the January transfer window in Arsenal, when everyone knew that Sven Mislintat was leaving. And I'm not saying Sven wasn't professional and wouldn't have done a good job, but if a guy is leaving, do you not need to go in a slightly different direction in terms of how you recruit players? So, you know, is Monchi's remit at Roma? I'm getting like coffee references here. Surely part of his remit is to identify and recruit players for the club to bring in this summer. But if he's finding talented players and he's going to a different club, what happens there? What's the temptation like? You know, can they put him on some kind of gardening leave? I don't know. It's a weird
you
situation.
You feel like they would have to, inevitably. And you sort of feel like, consequently, he'd kind of be able to informally start an advisory role at Arsenal pretty swiftly. But
yeah,
it's basically, as soon as this thing becomes a reality or something that is actually going to happen, it's kind of in the interest of everybody to make it happen very quickly. There's no point in him hanging around at a club that he's leaving. And strategically, Arsenal need to get him in place as soon as possible. So if he is the guy, hopefully they can come to an arrangement really, really quickly.
Yeah, yeah. It does need to be sorted. You know, because last summer we did our incoming business very quickly. This summer there's a lot more going on in terms of players leaving and players who probably need to leave as well. So, you know, there's a lot of work to do at Arsenal this summer. So I do hope, you know... I'm sure they know what they're doing. Maybe that sounds wildly optimistic, given the way some decisions are made. But, you know, if it's a case that they're waiting till the summer to get the right man, then fair enough.
Yeah,
but I do think he will have to have some kind of an input over the coming months, because it just can't be a case that he turns up in July. You know, remember the transfer window closes before the start of the season now. And Arsenal have got some, you know, we've got some travelling to do this summer as well with going to America and everything else. So, yeah, there will be a need to get it all, even if it's unofficial, to get things sorted as quickly as possible.
I'm sure him and Unai could just WhatsApp each other, right?
Yeah.
Unai would be like, you know, I need a centre-half, and Monchi sends him three names and Raul goes and gets them. If only it was that straightforward, but...
Yeah.
I'd like to imagine. So, well, speaking of the things we need to do in the summer, your friend of mine, the lovely Clive from the Arsenal Vision podcast at Clive PAFC, asks, have we found two fullbacks finally?
Where? Like under the...
I assume he means under in Bellerin and Kolasinac.
Well, I mean, we didn't find Bellerin. I mean, he's been there quite a long time.
True.
Does he mean Lichtsteiner? Do you think he means Lichtsteiner?
I don't think so.
But why would he ask that question now when Bellerin's been out injured for a long time? You know Bellerin's there. Lichtsteiner played well.
Oh, Lichtsteiner and Kolasinac. Yeah, I think that is what he means, looking at the replies to the question. Mustafi as well played fullback yesterday, let's not forget.
Yes, I've heard Clive advocating that. And I spoke about that actually on the Arscast a couple of weeks ago. Have we, you know, like you, I think there was an awful lot to like about Kolasinac yesterday, the way that he played. You know, I think we can all see that when he gets into the final third, he's got quick feet for a big man. Surprisingly quick feet at times for a big guy. He's good at anticipating in the final third as well. You know, he makes the runs, but positionally he's very good as well. Where the concerns have been about his defensive work, and it's not really so much about the out-and-out defending. I think it's the willingness and the ability to get back into defensive positions, because he does spend so much of the game in the opposition half and in the opposition final third. So I thought that was really pleasing yesterday, was the fact that he was back there doing the job. He made a great block on a shot in the second half from a fairly dangerous position. I thought that was really good defending. You know, he was there or thereabouts when balls were dropping in the box. He hasn't always been quick to react in those situations. But it was just, I'm not going to say it's just one game. It's not like he's never defended well, but it's not been his key attribute, has it? Which is an unfortunate thing when you're being asked to play left back. But I feel like it might have gone some way to convince Unai Emery that he is somebody who can play in a back four, because he's been sort of reluctant to use him in a back four in the past, hasn't he? He's been more inclined to go with Monreal, who's a more natural left back, more natural fullback, and Kolasinac seems better suited to the wing back role, even though he has played a lot of football as a fullback. So, have we found? I mean, Lichtsteiner, you know,
I still have concerns about Lichtsteiner.
Yeah, me
honest.
Too. Of course. Look, he was great yesterday. He had a really good 45 minutes. Was good until what? When did he come off? After about an hour or something like that? 55 minutes, something. You know, he played pretty well, but. You know, we have to take that performance in the overall context of his season, which hasn't been great. So, you know, he's a very experienced player, and will know as well as anybody that he hasn't quite been up to snuff this season. If it's a case that he finds some form and his experience shows in this final part of the campaign in the last couple of months, then great, that'd be fantastic. It doesn't really mean, I think, that we've found an answer to our problem at right back in the absence of Hector Bellerin. It just means we've found somebody who can come in and do a relatively competent job. With Kolasinac, let's see what he can do in the next game at Bournemouth, or whether it's Tottenham. You know, if we can see him repeat that kind of defensive commitment, then we do have more chance of keeping clean sheets. So I'm not sure we've found all the solutions yet, but it was encouraging to see what we saw yesterday.
Yeah, and still not sold on the idea of Mustafi as a right back.
I'm just sort of generally not sold on the idea of Mustafi, you know. So it's not so much that I can see how he would do a job there, because he is physically able to do it in terms of his stature and size, and is, you know, he's quite energetic and stuff like that. So, in the short term, I think it's something you can get away with, but not really for a prolonged period. I think eventually the truth will out when it comes to players being played out of position. You know, they get exposed. Oxlade-Chamberlain as a wingback, for example. You know, he had some really good days, and then some days where it was just a disaster. It's a little different from Mustafi, you know, playing as a fullback. He's played there before in his career. So, look, we do have a problem there. We have a problem because of Bellerin's injury. And the best we can do is kind of muddle through and hope that we're not exposed too badly. And if we can get away with it by rotating, depending on the opposition, that might be the best way to go.
I think, you know, I've said all season long, I think Arsenal need a long-term left back. But if Kolasinac can perform at that level every time he plays, or close to it, maybe that ceases to be the case. But that's a significant but. And I think, you know, we need to see.
Yeah. I think we need a left back anyway, because I do kind of think that Nacho is... Did we extend his contract in the end?
We have apparently taken up an option to extend him for another year. So... I spoke about this last week, but, you know, I don't think we're going to buy in all the positions people think we're going to buy.
Yeah.
And left back feels like one where maybe they'll cut their cloth a bit. If Kolasinac can keep up this kind of performance.
If.
Well, speaking of summer spending, this was a really interesting question, I thought, from Robbie, who's at L.O. Breary on Twitter. And Robbie said, I'm proud of the fact that we have owners that don't invest their own money into squad building. In any other organisation, this would be considered a failing business. So why is a self-sustainable model seen with such cynicism when it comes to football clubs?
It is a really good point. The answer, the simple answer, is that if everybody was operating on a self-sustainable model, then I don't think anybody would have any problem with it. You know, I think realistically, that's what should happen. You know, that's what FFP was supposed to do. It's turned out to be utterly toothless, a joke, basically, because they've been unable to enforce it. But I think it should be the case that any organization, football club, business, whatever it is, you spend what you generate and you can earn more by being successful, you know? And it does give some clubs an advantage because they've got bigger stadia and what have you. But I think that would be the ideal way for football to be run. You know, I don't see any issue with that. Where the problem is that it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. Money talks in football, and the link between success, winning titles, and money is impossible to ignore. So the issue I have, and I've said this before, is that I find it annoying when our owners talk about how much they want Arsenal to win things, win the Champions League, compete for the Premier League, and insist that this is the way that it's going to happen when you look at how success is achieved, particularly when you're a club who is trying to adjust your trajectory, right? So we're trying to, you know, we've sort of gone on a bit of a decline, and maybe we're just slightly at the bottom of that little decline, and we want to get back up again. We want to change the trajectory upwards, and operating in this way makes it much more difficult to do that, you know? So that's where it is for me. It's unfortunate. I think it's sad that football isn't run that way. But unless there's a real will on the part of the people who run the game to make football clubs operate in a self-sustaining way, you spend what you earn or what you can afford to spend, then we're gonna struggle to catch up, and we're gonna struggle to win things. So maybe it's, you know, it's a bit idealistic or a bit utopian to think, yes, we're right. You know, there is no real moral high ground here, unfortunately. So that's kind of where I am with that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like there's a bit of a perception that the kind of self-sustaining model is a cronky imposition, but it's not. It's something that's been in place for a long time, right?
Suits cronky.
It suits Cronky to not change it.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is, again, partly about the kind of communications vacuum that exists a little bit around Arsenal, because when we did have the self-sustaining model, when we built the new stadium and we had Arsene Wenger kind of extolling the virtues of that, I think people were generally more supportive. You know, as the listeners said, you know, it's kind of there was something to be proud of potentially in that. But I think that has completely evaporated now. I think, yeah. I don't feel like it's so rare to hear an Arsenal fan saying what the question says, if you know, I'm proud of that fact. But I feel like around 2006, when we were building a new stadium and had this young team, I genuinely believe that there were people who did feel that way.
Wasn't that in some ways a response to Chelsea and what we saw Chelsea doing, and how distasteful everybody thought it was that a billionaire whose fortune is generated through questionable methods, to be very diplomatic and probably sensibly diplomatic, you know, everyone talking about, how much they simply bought the title and all that kind of stuff. I think it was a reaction to that because we hadn't really seen anything quite like it on that level. You know, there were, if you think about Blackburn, what Blackburn did when they won the league,
yeah,
right? And Jack Walker financing big transfers like Alan Shearer and Chris Sutton and all that. He put together a very expensively assembled squad for the time. The difference, I suppose, was that Jack Walker had grown up a Blackburn fan. He was a Blackburn fan and he was investing in the team that he loved and supported his whole life. Whereas Roman Abramovich was using Chelsea for what? To satisfy his sporting ambitions or to make sure he had a high profile in one of the biggest cities in the world, you know?
Of course.
You know, so I think that's where that came from. That reaction was sort of an antidote to what we saw and I think can continue to see as something that's not great for the game in general.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think those things are still present and I think it's still possible to kind of position ourselves relatively to that. I think there are a couple of things. I think we've sort of grown tired of not winning, which, you know, in 2006 we weren't. You know, in 2006 we'd come off the back of an invincible season. We weren't as desperate for a Premier League title as we are now. And I also do think there is this lack of communication that I do think is a problem. I think if the club, even with or without Stan Kroenke, I think if they had like a sort of stated ethos and identity and almost like belief system that they adhered to,
yeah,
then I think fans could kind of buy into that or not. But it's just the sort of vagueness in the vacuum that I think is so problematic.
Wow.
It's an interesting discussion. I think you're right as well that football, because of the likes of Chelsea and Man City, you know, the landscape shifted so dramatically that if you realistically want to compete, you almost don't have a choice in terms of spending. And I think as well, the reason we react differently to Kroenke about it is, you know, people never expected the Hillwoods to go out and buy Neymar because, you know, Arsenal's previous ownership didn't really have wealth on that scale. But Stan does and could and doesn't.
Yeah.
And that probably makes it slightly more galling.
That is a very good point. Okay, a couple of quick ones to finish.
Go on.
This one comes from S.H. Harrington. What ridiculous football beliefs do you hold despite there being no evidence to back them up? Mine is that any combative central midfielder could easily fill in at fullback. For example, Lucas Torreira could solve our right back crisis.
I would buy that. And again, I've got no rationale for it, but I think Lucas Torreira, to me, he looks like he'd be an excellent fullback. Do you share that instinct?
Not really. Not really. But I can see some vague logic to it.
I think central midfielders and fullbacks, you know, it's stamina, it's tackling ability, it's good technique in tight areas.
Yeah.
What football beliefs do I have?
I don't have it, but it's certainly one that a lot of people seem to have.
Central defenders as defensive midfielders?
Exactly. Any central defender who shows a modicum of on-the-ball talent is immediately recast as the perfect answer to our defensive midfield problems. That might speak to some of the issues that we've had with wanting a defensive midfielder for many years. But that one does the rounds quite often, doesn't it?
Yeah. I don't know. I think my current one, my sort of bee in my bonnet I have at the moment is that I can't get over how sort of random footballers' careers are. You know, I can't get over how if a player makes a certain move at a certain time, they might end up having a career that sort of, you know, takes them around the top clubs. But if they don't, they end up sort of, you know, in the championship or something like that. I feel like there are gaps between players that are sometimes so fine and they end up having really different careers. So like, I believe there are probably players in like the lower reaches of the Premier League or even in the championship who in like an alternative life, a parallel universe, are playing for like a Champions League club and are sort of doing fine.
Well, like Nathan Ake.
Like Nathan Ake. Well, yeah, maybe that's my crazy football belief that Nathan Ake is a Champions League player.
Yeah.
I tweeted, yeah, saying, what about Nathan Ake for Arsenal? And had a very... In fact, I did a poll. Should we see what the people said?
Oh, yes, please. Because yes. It's scientific. Once you've done a poll, then it's based in science. And nobody can argue with science.
No one can argue with science. So the poll was, should we buy Nathan Ake? And 66% of people said yes. 34% said no. The people are with me.
People are with
you. It's a sizable margin.
Well, I mean, is he not going to play against us on Wednesday night?
Yes, and I feel like I've done an excellent jinx here because, you know, knowing me, he will be terrible on Wednesday and everyone will say, you are a fool for banging this drum. And Arsenal will reap the benefits, so that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think he's a bit Mustafi for me. I know he's left-footed, but he's not big enough as a central
defender.
He isn't
very big. He's about
not very big. 5'11".
Yeah. I think that really counts against him as well.
If I was a football manager, I would no central defender under 6 foot. Absolutely not. Get out, Cannavaro, get the fuck out of here. You're not playing at centre-half. You can't be any good. You're only 5'9".
Okay, you've right Cannavaro off. Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, look, if we think of our best central defenders over the past 20 or 30 years, they have all been comfortably north of 6 foot, maybe with the exception of Cola Torre.
That's true. Yeah.
He is an exception. Yeah, to be fair, actually, I was saying, I sort of said, what about Nathan Ake? I didn't actually state my opinion on whether we should buy
him. Oh, you're backtracking.
No, I'm serious. Now. Because I think, actually, the biggest obstacle would be price. You know, I think Premier League defender looking at 30 million or something, you know, straight away. And that's most of our transfer budget, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I choose the Spanish player I've never heard of, please.
Yeah, I reckon that's who it's going to be as well.
I reckon there's going to be a few of them.
Yeah, you never know. All right, we'll see. Oh, go on.
I've got one more question.
Okay.
Where has it gone? I was really looking forward to it. Oh, yes. It comes from Mbane. I think I'm pronouncing that right. And it's who's at MKJ Arsenal. And they ask, would you rather be a normal person with Guendouzi's hair?
A normal person. Okay.
Okay. Or have Jovino's hair, but be able to fly?
Easy.
Jovino's hair?
Jovino's hair. For sure.
I completely agree.
I mean,
to be fair, I'd take Guendouzi's hair at this point as well. I'm not worried about that.
You used to have it. Used to have Guendouzi's hair.
I miss it every day. So, yeah. If anything, I want it back from him.
You've been there and you've worn that particular merkin on your head. But, yeah, Jovino's hair.
Jovino's hair is a small price to pay for flight.
Well, here's the other thing, right? One, you could shave it off.
Yeah.
Right? Does that take away your ability to fly, though?
I don't know, but you could just fly high enough that no one will ever see your hairline.
You wear a hat.
Oh, that's also an alternative idea, yeah.
Just wear a hat. Just, you know, one of those kind of hipster woolly hats, you know, that they wear way back on their head.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Like a Freddie Ljungberg-style crochet hat.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm. Yeah, I definitely have Jovino's hair. And the ability to fly? Think of all the mischief you could get up to.
Do you think if you could fly...
Do you know what I'd do?
You'd be a Premier League footballer.
If you could fly. Yeah, I mean...
Offside would be tricky.
They'd
struggle with VAR and stuff, trying to draw a line to a man 30 foot in the air.
But imagine what you could do, like, from corners. Think about this Unai Emery short corner routine. You're just going to bang it 25 feet in the air, and all of a sudden you're up there and you can do an overhead kick. Because if you're, you know, if you can fly, you could practice your acrobatics.
You could get the keeper taking the corners, just booting them up into the sky.
Yeah.
And then you've just really, really got to get your head over it to get it down from 40 feet in the air.
Yeah.
I had a thought about the corners, by the way. You know, we had this chat about short corners, direct corners.
Yeah.
And how infuriating short corners are. Maybe this is a very banal, obvious point. And feel free to tell me if it is. But I suddenly thought, is the sole purpose... Sole purpose is the main purpose of the short corners to bring some sense of variety so that the direct corners don't become so straightforward to defend against.
Yeah, in some ways, yeah. And it's to try and bring men out of the box.
Yeah.
You know, so when you do get the ball in, the box is less crowded, and if you attack the ball well enough, then maybe you can have a chance. I mean, I get it. They're just frustrating, aren't they, when they don't work. It is really frustrating.
But I suppose what I was sort of getting at is maybe the ones that are direct, say, against Partey, worked in part because having done short corners, they then had to dispatch a man or two to the edge of the box against that possibility, and then when the ball comes in directly, the box is more clear.
Yeah, yeah. What are Arsenal going to do? This is the question that defenders worry about.
Defenders,
are they
going to
take
everywhere.
It short? Are they not going to take it short? Who knows? This is so confusing to us. Tactical genius is what it is, James. But do you know what? I was just going to say before we went and called time on this, you know what else I would do if I could fly and I was a Premier League footballer?
No, tell me.
I'd shit in Ashley Young's mouth.
Right. Great. I mean, yeah, and you wouldn't be the first, but I think maybe the finest.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you could do it from less height as well. You could just swoop in, drop it, and then disappear again.
Yeah, like a bouncing bomb.
Exactly.
The ones that went on water, yeah.
Oh, should we say about the predictions?
Oh, yes. A lot of people have asked us to do the predictions and whether or not we're going to finish in the top four. And what it means is we're going to have to predict all the Arsenal fixtures, all the Manchester United fixtures, and all the Chelsea fixtures. And maybe, depending on what happens on Wednesday night, maybe also the Tottenham fixtures. So that would take a lot longer than normal, or would take up most of a part of a show. So what we'll do after the Bournemouth game, when we can see where we are, and there's 10 games left to go, we'll record an extra podcast on Thursday, and we will stick it out. Will we do it on Patreon? No, we'll do it. We'll do it for everyone. Everyone can have it. And we'll do that on Thursday, and we'll do the predictions and see where it is we're going to end up. More science, James. More scientific method on this podcast. So,
wow, we're going to have to do sums correctly.
Correct.
I'm nervous, Andrew. I'll be honest with you.
I, too, am nervous. Okay, well, that will be available for people on Thursday. If you do want to sign up to our Patreon, that would be great. Patreon.com/arseblog. We are, or I am today, because lots of people have asked, and it is, in some ways, in relation to the Arsenal Vision podcast, who launched a Discord chat server. Lots of the people on Arseblog have been asking me if we can do a Discord thing, so I'll set that up today. So if you're an Arseblog member on Patreon, I don't know what happens. Maybe you get an invite, or maybe you have to twiddle some zeebles yourself to join, but there will be an Arseblog Discord server. So patreon.com/arseblog, £5 a month plus VAT if you're in the EU, and you get lots of extra content and articles, and it helps support everything that we do. Worth pointing out as well that James, on Wednesday, Arseblog will be 17 years old. 17.
Wow.
That's mental, isn't it?
There are footballers who are
17.
Yeah. Yeah. Scary.
Are we older than Emile Smith Rowe? Probably not, but, you know.
We're not, but we're not. Arseblog is not much older than, not much younger than Saka, I would think.
Right.
I don't know.
There you go.
Scary.
There you go. 17 years. Blimey. Anyway, we'll have that extra podcast for you on Thursday. We'll do the predictions, and we'll have a regular Arsecast for you on Friday as well, because we've got the Bournemouth game to react to and also look ahead to the North London Derby on Saturday. So lots going on. Busy week. Thanks as always for being with us, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.